Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cross Pollination with Matt Harrington, a 30-minute podcast focusing on young leadership and the skills needed for tomorrow's workforce. Cross Pollination works to connect ideas, concepts, and strategies from various thought leaders and share those insights with the world. Now, here's your host, Matt Harrington.
Welcome, everybody. It's the 15th of the month. That means it's another time, another episode of Cross Pollination or X-Pollination. Welcome to episode 21. We keep on moving forward. This time, we're going to talk about millennials and workplace culture, which I'm very excited about. If you're just joining us for the first time, Cross Pollination is a podcast series powered by Blog Talk Radio that started from our book, Survival of the Hive. Feel free to go over and check it out and pick it up. It's on Amazon. But cross-pollination is a platform to connect, pollinate, and inspire leadership and engagement with a special focus on young professionals, namely the millennials and the generations after that. The Growing Millennial Leadership Program, which this podcast is a part of, works with young, aspiring professionals to build and grow leadership capabilities and competencies for their career and their organization. Check out more of this at growingmillennialleadership.com. Well, I'm very excited to be talking about workplace culture. We've been doing, this is our 21st show, and so over the time, and I was just taking a look back, we've done stuff on talent development, branding, knowledge sharing, wealth, productivity, engagement, all those sorts of things, usually with a focus on young professionals, but also how do managers and leaders in organizations come together and help them kind of actualize those key topics. You can't have those key topics without the umbrella of culture. And I think culture is one of the most underrated things that organizations focus on, and yet it's one of the most important things that organizations should focus on. So I was excited when Jim Knight reached out to me, and we're going to introduce Jim in just a minute, reached out to me. We started talking. He just published a book. I picked that up. I read it. I loved it. So let me give you a little bit of background about Jim Knight, and then I want to bring him on the air. Jim Knight is a training and development veteran. He has over 30 years' experience. He's facilitated a variety of interactive topics, including sessions on organizational culture, world-class service, employee brand and engagement, performance management, leadership, facilitation, training, a whole bunch of stuff. His recent book, which I picked up, Culture That Rocks, so we're going to be plugging that all this show, focuses on his 21 years of work with the Hard Rock Cafe brand. Yes, that's correct, the Hard Rock Cafe. We're all probably familiar with that brand, and so I was very excited to get him on the air. And in the book, he talks about the lessons he learned along the way as he helped build their renowned workplace culture. So if you've ever stepped foot into a Hard Rock Cafe, you know the culture that we're referring to. He eventually became the head of the School of Hard Rocks, running point on all training and development functions for Hard Rock International. He's also the founder of Knight Speaker and People Forward. Jim, I want to welcome you to Cross Pollination. Thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy day to join us on the show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it as well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. So I've given kind of the laundry list of what you've been accomplishing and working on. But give us a little bit more of your background. Where did your passion for management training and specifically workplace culture come from?
Yeah, you know, most of my working background was kind of the perfect setup to what I'm doing now. For sure, my first jobs really were in hospitality. So that's kind of where a lot of that management and training focus started. My first job was at a snack bar at a local attraction where I'm from in Central Florida called Gatorland Zoo. I'm not sure if you've heard of it before. It's an actual working gator farm in Orlando. So I got to do a lot of things there, but certainly starting a snack bar. And I worked at Olive Garden as well. This was all back in the late 80s and early 90s. But while I was doing those jobs, when I went to college, and I was on a music scholarship where I got my AA degree in music performance. That's what I wanted to do, was sort of be a rock star if I could and just sort of perfect my craft. But while I was there, I discovered that to really make a living, you had to be great. So I changed direction. I wasn't great. I was okay. But, you know, I hear that those that can't do teach. That's kind of how the old saying goes. So I became a middle school teacher for 6 years. which I loved, but I needed a summer job when I was at school, you know, June, July, and August. There's no school going on. I applied as a host at a Hard Rock Cafe, as you mentioned, and that was perfect for me because I was able to use the background and the combination, I would say, of music and hospitality and, you know, even the education part. So naturally, I started liking my night job a lot better than my teaching day job. And, you know, yep. After a few years as a line-level employee, I became a manager. I eventually ran the training and development function of the brand. I even stayed there, as you said, for 21 years, just overseeing all the learning and the cultural initiatives for, and you said the cafes, but it also included the hotels and the casinos. And that was until I, and you can't see my air quotes here, but until I retired, I like to say, from corporate life in 2012, sort of to do my own thing and help out other companies and industry. So, you know, the short answer is my passion came from the experience of definitely teaching school in the public education system, but also developing my training skills at Hard Rock. And that was in print and video and e-learning and facilitating instructor-led classes. I loved all of that. And I got a chance to protect the company culture that I was adopted into. I love it.
That's great. And I'm sure you would agree, if you can teach something, you can be anything in the world because if you can teach it, you know it. And if you can teach other people, I mean, that's one of the foundational elements of leadership and being able to manage and coach people is your ability to transfer knowledge. And so I couldn't agree more. I always find that in careers, we get into these areas and we learn a little bit and we become something. Like you said, I became a teacher. Whoever thought I'd be, you know, an author and working with Hard Rock and being a trainer 30 years later, but along that path. And I think that's always important for young professionals to understand. So often we want to get to the finish line and we want to be, you know, the celebrity, the famous, the best. And yet part of the journey is about building those skills. So I'm glad you mentioned that teaching portion. There are probably some teachers out there listening that you still have an opportunity to kind of to expand upon that teaching role, and yeah, it's so important to get that experience as well.
Well, you know, that's actually my driving force. I mean, even now, I do aspire to be a thought starter for other businesses, and this would be in any industry now at this point. I want to help them be effective. I want them to be sustainable. The fact that, you know, you're right, it wasn't just about being the person in the public domain or being a rock star. For me, I'm as close as I'm ever going to get to that, and it's probably behind the scenes. Being in that sort of trainer teacher role. So that's always been a driving force to me. That's really the way that I'm going to have much more impact and influence in the world.
You talked a little bit in the beginning about when you're talking about Hard Rock and working there about kind of protecting the brand or protecting the culture rather. I don't want to get too far. I mean, one, let's define culture. So if you have a working definition of culture, just so our audience kind of knows what we're working with. But then talk to me a little bit about kind of, I liked how you said protecting the culture.
Yeah, well, you know, for me, it wasn't so much that I had to build or create or even develop a great organizational culture. I was lucky enough to step into it. My specific role, just because Hard Rock is one of those unbelievably well-known iconic brands, I just didn't want to screw it up. You know, I want to make sure that it was well protected in a lot of ways that I could hand it off to the next guy or girl that came along. So even though I was there for 2 decades, I really wanted to build it, grow it, develop it, but it was already unbelievable by the time I got there. So, you know, hopefully I was able to put a little bit of a stamp on it, but just make sure that it was in, you know, the brand was bigger than myself, and I just wanted to make sure that I had done it justice. You know, and by definition, culture is still one of those really nebulous, esoteric concepts that for some people, even business leaders now, I think, it's probably why it's been dismissed. And I think you said that at the beginning of the show. It's not even, I think, specifically addressed in the past in a lot of ways because it's just so... It's something you can't put your finger on, you know, and it's a pretty big buzzword in corporate America these days. I hear it all the time, you know, and actually clearly defining it was one of my main objectives when I wrote the book or any time that I speak. I just wanted to give it a much, you know, a robust, crystal clear definition so it could become tangible and even a malleable thing, if I could put it in those words, so that somebody could actually address it. That's what I wanted to do is define it.
Yeah. What and you don't have to give us the list, but if you had to think of, again, in going back to protecting the culture, what were some of the tools, the assessments, the what was the nitty-gritty things that you would recommend to an organization where they are trying to protect the culture? And in my mind, you know, you've got a couple of things. You've got the Facebook and the Googles of the world, and that's probably where culture and Zappos, those and Starbucks come to mind. Those things percolate to the top of, okay, now we're talking about culture again because they have such an amazing culture that brings this kind of energy and innovation, and everybody else wants to recreate that. And so you have that kind of culture buzzword again. So, and then obviously as Facebook matures into its 10th year now, it's kind of thinking, well, we're not a fraternity anymore, and the like. And so you have young organizations that are saying, you know, how do we mature into a maturing adolescent company culture? And you have some older legacy organizations that are saying, how do we I was just at a speaking place the other day, and it was about how do we reinvigorate our culture so that it is attractive to young professionals. So if I guess the question is, if we were to get back to how do you protect the culture, and part of protecting in my mind is also innovating it so it survives, would be some things that you would recommend to a strategic team or a CEO?
You know, you said it best. You know, I come into contact with a lot of organizations as well that they are trying to reinvigorate. They're trying to get back to the good old days. Or you hear this all the time, you know, oh, it's not the way that it used to be. You know, and the way the organization initially started is so different. No, duh. Of course it is. And I think, I guess when people hear that word culture, you know, they confuse that word with the word heritage. I really do think that, you know, which is an awesome word. I love it. It's one of my all-time favorites. But it's about the past, right? And it is different than culture. And I can only say that because I actually define it like this. I really do think the ultimate definition of company culture is that it's just a collection of individuals. You know, and each of those people has some unique behaviors. There are definitely some people out there that argue with me, and they think it's, you know, oh, it's culture is everything. But of course it is. I'm in that camp, and I agree with that. But I do think if you were to swap out the people and not necessarily the product that you're creating or the environment, I do think that you would have a completely, totally different company culture. It's about the people that currently work in the business. And so the product and the environment might be a piece of it, but human behavior is where I'm going to hang my hat. And that's probably selfishly the training and development guy coming out of me. So to add to that, if my definition makes sense to people, then it's much easier, I think, to understand why company culture changes all the time. As people join or leave the band, the culture changes. As people come and go, it definitely is going to make a dent in the culture one way or another. And therefore, if you really are looking to strengthen the culture, which is what I think your question was about, you know, just make sure that you ensure you have the right people representing it. Even if it's not the founding members, you know, all the rigor that you put into that opening group, you can get to the culture you desire by just hiring right fit people in the business. In fact, I do think that company culture should be really, really hard to copy because of the people, but it shouldn't be hard to understand. And that's why I've focused on just trying to clearly define it. So I focus on people a lot. If I were to list off a laundry list, and like you said, if you've read the book, the thing is just replete with a bunch of bullet point suggestions and a bunch of different chapters. I am coming with, you know, well-developed storytelling collateral. I'm coming with things that look like comic books and airline safety cards and, you know, IKEA furniture instructions, you know, very visual, even if you're doing print. And you mentioned social media. I'd be doing some distance-based electronic stuff that's just really, really compelling. Even in my consulting business, the first thing that I try and do to stop the bleeding, at least from just having a very mundane, boring organization, at least from a communication standpoint, I'm going after the new hire orientation. So really well-developed instructor-led materials. It's a killer brand video. It's an awesome employee handbook. Like I said, that looks like some Lego instructions, you know. You do things like that. Right. That does help, I think, protect the culture. It's not the be-all, end-all. The time that we have on probably this call, I can't list them all, but I can tell you, I would be looking at every area I could to make sure that people feel great about the company and they can help perpetuate the brand going forward. They feel great about being a brand ambassador.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more with what you're talking about with the people. You know, it's something that we talk about over where we're at. Of, you know, you can recreate a widget, you can recreate
yep.
strategy, but you can't recreate kind of the people that make up that culture. You know, Jim Collins talks about that a lot in Good to Great, which is getting the right people in the right seats on the right bus, going in the right direction. And that, if you can
Definitely.
Do that with an organization, which is a little bit of a culture piece, then you're going places. But that's a lot harder said than done, getting the right people in those right seats. It's not always about firing people. It's about just saying, you weren't a fit there, but can we utilize your talent somewhere else? Well,
it's one of those things.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, no, I just want to plug you in. If you're just joining us, Jim Knight is on the air with us right now. If you want to learn more about Jim Knight, his website, knightspeaker.com, please go visit that. He's also on Facebook. He's on Twitter, at Knight Speaker, KNIGHTSPEAKER. He's also on LinkedIn as well. But definitely go over to his website, knightspeaker.com. I'm sure he has all the socials up there for you to follow along. And Jim Knight is with us here on our cross-pollination about workplace culture. But I don't want to cut you off, Jim, so please add on to what you were saying.
No, you are making a great point. And I would just say that one of my favorite workplace culture crushes, if you will, is Southwest Airlines. And I know they're so overused, but there's a reason why, right? They're phenomenal in so many ways. And when I was doing a little research on the book, I found this great comment from Southwest president. Her name is Colleen Barrett. And she'd co-authored a book with, Jim Collins, but I think it's Ken Blanchard. That's right. She co-authored with Ken Blanchard. And she made this quote that I use in the book where she says, "I don't dictate our culture. Rather, it stems from the collective personality of our people." And then she basically went on to say, you can copy all of our processes if you want, but you're never going to replicate our culture. You know, and that's because of our cool brand ambassadors. And I think that's true. And I am personally, I'm shocked that some other airline has not yet copied the way that their people interact. You know, you can copy their onboarding process, the free bags, you know, bags fly free, or whatever the tagline is, right? The ability to change flights without any fee, or if you have to cancel, all of these things,
right.
I think would help contribute to them being one of the most successful airlines in the world. But it wouldn't matter if you didn't have those cool people that help make up the brand. So I'm echoing
what you said.
It's about
and you know that, Jim. I mean, you've been through enough corporate places that the hardest thing to do also is to get the right people and to kind of mature them. And so we're all about window dressing in a lot of organizations about we are this, we are that. And yet you say, okay, we'll put $1 million in your training budget. They go, well, we're not going to do that. You go, well, then you can't get the right people in the right seat. So I do have to laugh, and I know that you are probably right on the same page with me when you go to people, and the argument always is, you know, we'll put more money into your training, development, onboarding, orientation, retention, exit interviews, those sort of things. No, we don't want to do that. We want to do more sales, marketing, that sort of thing. You know, you were talking about just really kind of utilizing social media and that sort of thing when we're talking about how do we promote and protect culture and even specifically around the people of that culture. One of the people that do it really well, I think, is Target. If you go over to A Bullseye View, they do a really neat website that's all about company careers, corporate responsibility. And I'm not sure it's completely based or for their staff, but they always have interviews over there with their staff. And it's kind of like if I were a millennial, and I was looking at Target as a possible place I'd want to work or start a career. Again, it's a very crisp website. So I think with the new generation, it's all about, you know, the design element and the functionality of things as well. We've got a limited amount of time, but I do have to pick your brain. I mean, you were working at Hard Rock. You were working with some rock stars. Was there an icon or an idol or somebody that you just had to meet that you finally did meet while you were working at Hard Rock?
Oh, man, yeah. You know, I met a lot. I certainly have had an opportunity to meet and spend some time with some of my faves. Melissa Etheridge comes to mind. You know, we had a great 15-20 minute discussion on philanthropy. She's really involved in a lot of different charitable philanthropic initiatives. Geez, back in the day, Chuck Berry, I got to hang out with backstage for a good 15-20 minutes. Dee Snider from Twisted Sister, you know, he's here in Orlando. I actually see him quite a bit. Best concert I ever saw was Stone Temple Pilots. So I had a chance to meet Scott Weiland, you know, who just passed away about a week and a half ago. I guess I had the most surreal moment, really, in being backstage at a Neil Young performance. It was about, I guess, 50,000 people in London, and it was a music festival that Hard Rock was producing. So, again, I was very lucky enough to have access. But I'm hanging out backstage. I'm by myself, and Paul McCartney showed up with his daughter. And I have this phenomenal memory of just the three of us kind of hanging out, me actually watching Paul videotaping and singing along to Neil Young tunes. It was just, it was a weird, wild moment. I was a Beatles fan, for sure, but to just see him there and really not a lot of people around us, that was pretty spectacular.
That's cool. That's cool. Let's shift the focus a little bit here. Just because this is a podcast, it does tend to focus on young professionals and the millennials, which is 1980 to about 2001, and pretty soon we'll have to convert over to Gen Z and start talking about that one as well. But
is that what you call them, Gen Z?
I've heard Gen Z and MTV just changed them to the founders. That's because millennials disrupted the culture, you know, kind of global culture and workplace culture, and the next generation is going to be the generation to rebuild it or to find the new culture that we're all supposed to do, you know, flex time, work from home, entrepreneurial spirit, those types of things, creative economy, that type of stuff. So apparently MTV 2 weeks ago came out and are calling Gen Z, which are probably the tweeners now, you know, they're 0 or 1, 2, about 15 years old. But that's an aside. But hopefully, if you're listening to the podcast, you get that little piece of information.
Well, you know, in my book, I call them the digital natives, and I've also heard iGen. It's so funny to see, you know, who's going to race and get it into people's vernacular. That's the word they're going to use. Founders? I'm not sure, but we'll see.
We'll see. Right. If we shift the focus over to millennials, the millennials are probably 21 to about 35, 37 right now, years old. So get that in people's minds. I'm thinking more of the audience. As we shift kind of cultures, and I just mentioned a bunch of things that are upheavals now just in the last 5 or 10 years, which is flex time, take Fridays off, I want a nap room, to kind of a really creative entrepreneurial spirit, team-oriented collaboration. What do you think is important to focus on in terms of culture and how it should change for the new worker?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do think it's changing. You know, I'm not a generational expert. I certainly have a lot of friends who are. And Matt, you probably have your finger on the pulse of the millennials as much as anybody. I'm sure you've seen that workplace culture. Like, again, we're going back to that word. It's a big deal with, I think, this current generation. You said flexibility. I think brands do have to sort of allow that to occur. I think you've got to foster more individuality. You know, millennials want to look and dress the way they want, and however that reflects them as a unique individual. I think leaders have to provide some really solid ongoing communication, you know, just to get everybody in the loop. You know, communication, and you said collaboration, those two are fantastic. I think millennials definitely want to be involved in decisions, you know, especially the ones that affect them. They don't want to just be dictated to. They do want to be recognized, I would say, more for positive performance. And I have to be cautious. I do say that I would try and recognize and prop people up in front of their peers. Not everybody likes that, but in general, I think you'd have a good chance if we did more of that and saying thank you to people. They definitely want to be rewarded for innovation. You know, they're, like you said, they're disruptive. Right? And I look at that positively. I love challenging the status quo. And I think these people that want to find new ways to do things, it's very important to them. So companies have to build in some sort of reward mechanisms that prop people up and not stomp on them, if you will, for trying to do something different. I think leaders have to provide some growth opportunities and sort of give a pathway for people to get to whatever the next level is. Geez, all of those are important. I do think we have got to get better at creating purpose in the work, you know, something bigger than the brand. And, of course, I dedicated an entire chapter on philanthropy. I just think that is so instrumental, knowing that society and business have to be better connected, and that these potential employees, these millennials or whatever, you know, the founders of the next group, you know, even if they're a prospective customer, they're all making decisions now on whether I'm going to eat, drink, shop, stay, play, work for a company. If they don't have any involvement in making the world better, they're going to be dead to them really quickly. So I think all of this just sort of supersedes just money and having a job. These are definitely cultural touch points, at least ones I can think of off the top of my head, for at least today's workforce. So culture,
yeah,
it shifted quite a bit.
No, I think those are all really great insights. And I know it's something that cultures are dealing with. We talked about it earlier on. You've got real young organizations that, you know, don't necessarily need the energy and innovation. They need more processes and protocols of how to get the right people in their business and how to grow that business. And that was a little bit of Mark Zuckerberg's issue in year two, three, and four. And he's just a fascinating one to study, because then all of a sudden he brings on, Cheryl, when he realized that he can't be a frat party anymore, and he actually has to put in some corporate policy just because it's becoming so big. And so you see this maturation of Facebook bring in Sheryl Sandberg and the like to really kind of put on some of the structural elements. And that's okay. You know, I think so often we want to be the cool young guys at the table. And yet, you know, even a Zuckerberg realized that, look, we've got to put some elements that make it so Facebook doesn't burn out in 3 years.
That's right.
And we sustain the culture. And then the maturation now, 10 years later, what are we? Or beyond that, as a legacy brand, as a legacy culture, as a legacy organization, now they're trying to reverse the clock. We don't have enough young people in here. We don't have enough leadership position to engage them, because a lot of it I've always found is to go back to the recession, and we've had to slice and dice some of our workforce, and now we realize we can do more with less, and so the leadership opportunities aren't as big, and so we've got to find new ways in our culture to engage and empower some of these younger professionals.
Right. I agree.
Before you go, something I ask all our guests, and I want to pick your brain, but is there a new technology or app? We've got about 2 minutes left, so feel free. You've got some time. But a new technology or app that you've downloaded in the past 3 months that you want to give a shout-out to?
Technology or app? The last 3 months? I have been big with Basecamp. That's probably a lot overused. So for me, I've got to have an online project management tool that works for me. I think it's the largest in the world. It's very visual.
It's great.
It is stupid simple, right, to use. That thing has changed my life, at least from a work standpoint. But, in my sessions, I use – go ahead, Basecamp.
No, I was just going to let you go. But what I love about it is it does integrate with your email. So it does,
does.
It's not completely out there in social, which some people forget about, but it does come back around. So anytime there's an update at your team, at your project, at your camp, it kind of sends you the old school email, which people still use so much of. So I love how it integrates within that.
I have a friend of mine who absolutely hates email, hates it, and has basically eliminated just by using Basecamp as their sort of communication tool. So I love that. I use an audience response tool called Poll Everywhere. Again, that one's been around for a while, but where people can use any phone and answer questions, and it populates real time onto the screen. So I use that more when I'm doing my instructor-led stuff. And then, of course, on the road, my critical travel apps that I have to have, whether it's Uber, weather.com, believe it or not, and, of course, now Netflix. I don't do too much entertaining on the road, but, geez, those three are really big. So I don't think any of those are new. Are you familiar with Hot Schedules?
Great.
That's online employee scheduling tool for the hospitality industry. That thing works really well for millennials. I think you talk about flexibility. Boy, they love being able to switch shifts and do it all electronically from a distance, like at the beach. You know,
great.
If they want.
Jim, we're gonna have to end there. But thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it a bunch.
All right. Have a good one.